We have U.S. Representative Brian Steil on the line on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We will talk through several issues facing Congress, starting with the economy. The Federal Reserve said in a new policy statement yesterday that high inflation remained the result of, quote, transitory factors. Policymakers expected progress on COVID vaccines to lessen the pandemic's effect on our economy, and the Fed kept interest rates unchanged. Have you noticed higher food bills or gas prices? What do you want to convey to Capitol Hill as you live through this pandemic? It's 800-642-1234. Republican Congressperson Brian Steil represents the 1st Congressional District, including Janesville, Racine, and Kenosha. Congressman Steil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
Good morning. You've raised alarm bells on inflation, joining other Republicans to call out prices growing faster than wages. What concerns you?
So I've had an ongoing conversation with the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell. I sit on the House Financial Services Committee, which has oversight over our Federal Reserve. These have been kind of ongoing hearings that we've been doing over the past, really call it year and a half, 2 years, talking about the risk of costs of things going up. And so economists will have a debate, is the correct term inflation, but it's definitely hitting folks in the pocketbook. The question is it transitory, meaning is it temporary, or is this long-term? With the amount of spending that we're seeing coming out of Washington, D.C., I have grave concerns that what we're seeing is long-term inflation. The price of goods are definitely going up. It's more expensive if you go to fill up your car with gas. It's more expensive when you go to the grocery store. Used cars are going up. New cars are going up. Rental cars are going up. You have prices going up, and what that does is hits people in the pocketbooks of everyday people, working people, folks that are on fixed incomes, our seniors. And so we have a real challenge in front of us when Washington, D.C. is spending money in the manner that it has over the past 18 months.
But the 5.4% jump in annual inflation, that's an average of a whole lot of items, and households aren't necessarily buying the ones that are getting a lot costlier. Not everyone out there is buying new cars and used cars. Some people are spending a lot less on gas by working from home. So wouldn't there be tremendous nuance as to whether a person is really getting a pay cut in this economy?
Well, when you look at it kind of gets into detail, what is the consumer price index, which is a whole basket of goods trying to say, what is the average person really seeing and the impact of their costs? And mm-hmm. So they're seeing huge annualized increases over last year, over 2 years. Now you see some people trying to explain that your costs are going down. You saw the White House try to show that the cost of your 4th of July barbecue actually went down 16 cents. When I talk to people day in and day out across the state of Wisconsin, they're seeing costs going up. And I think that that shows up in the CPI index, which is a broad base of goods. You see it with parents who are buying get back to school goods here as we head into the month of August. Those prices are going up. And inflation functions as a tax on everyone, where everyone is seeing those costs go up. It's going to be different depending on what you personally are buying, but you're seeing costs go up across the board.
So what are you recommending that the Fed do? What would you tell Fed Chair Jerome Powell to be done to fix or stop inflation?
Well, I think there's two pieces of the puzzle. So one, you have the monetary policy where the Federal Reserve is excessively buying bonds. But on the other side, you have the fiscal issue, which is lawmakers in Washington, D.C. continue to spend money way beyond the revenues of the federal government, taking us further into deficit and further into debt. They have to sell bonds to be able to maintain this massive spending amount. That's what Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell is buying on the other end. So on one side, you have the government selling. On the other side, you have the government buying these bonds, massive amounts of money coming into the economy. And in my opinion, that's what's driving up the cost of goods for people day in and day out. I think what's essential from the lawmaker perspective in Washington is we have to get our spending under control and put us back on a path to stability.
And we're going to talk about spending and the infrastructure bill in particular in just a moment. Let me reintroduce you. We're talking with U.S. Representative Brian Steil, who represents the 1st Congressional District, includes Janesville, Racine, and Kenosha. What questions do you have for Congressman Steil? 800-642-1234. Let's zoom into your district for a moment and find out, what are you hearing locally globally about the economy and the bounce back from the pandemic and how it compares to the Great Recession, you know, when you saw the GM plant close and there was a lot of economic havoc in your district.
Now, the economy today is very different than where we were in the doldrums, right? Call it 2009, 2010, in particular in Janesville after Janesville lost the General Motors plant. But we saw manufacturing have difficult times all across the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin put in pretty significant reforms after the election of Governor Walker, making it better for businesses to come here and hire our workers. We now have a period of time where we have a shortage of workers. That's a positive thing in many ways. But at the same time, we got to make sure that we're allowing workers to get back to work. And so one of the things that we could do to address our worker shortage is to remove the $300 plus up stay-at-home bonus. And so you saw Governor Evers veto that. We've seen governors, Democrat and Republican across the country, remove that $300 stay-at-home bonus, getting workers back to work. The sooner that we come back on the other side of this pandemic and we get back to normal, we get workers back to work, students back to school, I believe the better off we are.
So what are you telling employers, though, who, you know, employees are saying, look, you're not paying enough. Wages are not keeping up with the high paying executive salaries and the actual, actual rewards these companies are seeing. That's not filtering down to your rank and file employees. What are you telling those employers to do who can't recruit at the level of pay that they're asking?
Well, the jobs that are available now across our state are higher than they were prior to the pandemic. And so you can just drive around the state. You'll see help wanted signs in places that you've never seen them before. Good paying jobs with benefits across our state. We want workers to always have a good job, a better job. But there are jobs that are available. What we want to do is make sure that we're not competing against the federal government. And so we want businesses to be competing against themselves. That's what's going to drive up wages, drive up benefits. We have some of the best workers in Wisconsin, anywhere in the country. My argument is we shouldn't have the federal government competing with the workforce in general, where we're encouraging people to stay home by paying them more to stay home than what they would be making if they were back in the market. I think there's some real opportunities to get the government out of the way and allow our workers to get back to work.
Let's bring in Megan in Dousman. Hi, Megan.
Hi, good morning. My question for Congressman Stiles, I hear him and other Republicans speaking a lot about the economy and spending and getting us back on track. And I wanted to get his thoughts on how increasing vaccination rates could contribute to that, as there would be, you know, less lost wages from being out of work and quarantine, and obviously the huge impacts of the pandemic on our economy overall. So I'm hoping to hear him advocate that his constituents and supporters get vaccinated.
Megan, thanks.
Great question, Megan. I love Dousman. I was there. They had the state frog jumping championship last weekend. I participated. My frog didn't go very far, but it is a great time when you have Dousman Derby days in Dousman. Dive into the question. I believe the vaccine is safe. I've taken the vaccine. What we have seen being the number one thing to encourage people to get the vaccine is not politicians bloviating about their opinion on the vaccine. The number one thing anyone can do, and the thing that I encourage folks who are deciding if the vaccine is right for them, is to talk to your physician. Individuals who talk to their physician walk away with the knowledge that's best for them. There's not gonna be a federal government mandate to get the vaccine. I believe it's safe, I believe it's healthy. It's shown that it can absolutely prevent people from getting seriously sick, in particular hospitalization rates amongst those who've been vaccinated. Is incredibly small compared with the general population.
But what is?
I think the vaccine is safe. I received it. But the best thing that you can do if you're making that decision is for you to go talk to your physician.
What is your stance on vaccine requirements for federal government workers like yourself and your staff?
Yeah, I don't think that we should have federal mandates on the vaccine. I do think that individuals are going to make the decision that's best for them. The number one thing individuals can do and making that decision is talking with their physician. We've seen this get politicized before the election when it was President Donald Trump. You saw now Vice President Kamala Harris play partisan politics and have questions about the vaccine. Now you see people making arguments maybe on another side. The best thing you can do is to make this non-political and to have conversations with your physician if you're undecided. I do not think that we need to have a federal government mandate to get the vaccine.
We have Congressperson Brian Stile of Wisconsin as we look at issues in Washington, repercussions for our state. Do you want Congress to continue to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol? What should be next steps? Do you live in Janesville or Kenosha, Racine? What do you want to ask your leadership in Washington? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican Congressperson Brian Stile is on the line representing Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. The House Select Committee investigating the deadly attack on the Capitol on January 6th. It held its first hearing this week. Four officers giving gripping testimony. Here's Sergeant Aquilino Ganel describing the scene.
I, too, was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die.
Should the committee subpoena former President Trump or get testimony from people around him that day? What do you want to ask Congressperson Brian Stile? 800-642-1234. So let's talk about the select committee. You voted against the creation of a House commission to investigate the insurrection. That commission started its work. What kind of investigation should take place on the deadly riot?
First off, what we need to do is to make sure that what occurred on January 6th never happens again. Two, we need to hold the criminals and engage in criminal behavior on January 6th accountable. You always got to allow the facts to lead us to justice. What we're seeing play out, unfortunately, is partisan politics. And that was my concern out of the gates as it relates to the investigation in the House. That doesn't mean the investigation that's also ongoing at the United States Department of Justice and the FBI. You got to remember there was a bipartisan investigation in the Senate as well. The House committee is becoming more and more partisan by the day. I was incredibly disappointed when Nancy Pelosi refused to allow two Republican members to be seated on that committee. I mean, what a missed opportunity to have the American people be able to hear both sides of any given argument, in particular where there were failures in the leadership of the Capitol Police, not the men and women that were on the front lines. Those men and women acted valiantly. But there are real questions about the Capitol Police Board, the kind of the highest levels of leadership, what the preparation was leading into that day. And I think that the fact that Nancy Pelosi removed two Republicans from that committee, refused to allow them on the committee, maybe better said, is a real show that this is going to be a more of a partisan process rather than the process that we saw in the Senate on the bipartisan investigation that the Senate did, as well as an ongoing investigation that's occurring at the United States Department of Justice and the FBI.
So what I'm hearing from you then is that this commission's work won't be fruitful, or that do you feel that there has been enough investigation then on what happened on January 6th?
The investigation may or may not be fruitful. I don't know what it will find, but I can tell you that it won't find everything. So rather than having an investigation that has Republicans and Democrats on the committee, it's a committee chosen almost now, I guess, exclusively by Nancy Pelosi. So I think it's going to miss opportunities to look at the evidence from both sides, which I think is going to be really important to making sure, one, that this never happens again. And then two, for those that engage in criminal behavior, they need to be held responsible. I just think it's a real missed opportunity where Nancy Pelosi kicked Republicans off of the committee and refused Republicans to add members to the committee.
Well, we're going to circle back here on the economy with U.S. Representative Brian Stile, represents the 1st Congressional District. Let's go to Jerry now in Viola. Jerry, hi.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. What would you like to say to the congressperson?
Well, I would first of all like to thank him very much for not discouraging people from getting the vaccine. I think that is awesome. My business was definitely hurt by the Republicans persuading people not to wear a face mask and drawing out this pandemic. Really hurt my bottom line. So I'm really glad to hear that he's not discouraging people from getting the vaccine in a 180 turnaround from what they were saying. So I really appreciate that. I would like to know what he thought about the $7.4 trillion that Trump borrowed, you know, deficit spending, versus Obama's $2.8 trillion for his last 4 years, and why there was no talk about the deficit during that period. And I just want to mention it was $4 trillion in his first 2 years when the economy was booming. He was borrowing money, giving tax cuts, zero talk about deficit spending. I want to know why he's bringing it up now.
Congressperson Style.
So what we're seeing in Washington, D.C. is spending being out of control for a very long time. So there is blame all across the board is to the vast amount of spending that's coming out of Washington, D.C. Now, you saw that continue to ramp up over a long period of time going way back. Then we got into the coronavirus. There was a period of time where excessive spending during a national emergency like that was important. I drove out from Janesville, Wisconsin, in my Chevy to Washington, D.C. at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic, where you couldn't even catch a flight, to get the CARES Act across the line. That was the act that made sure that we were making sure individuals could cover their grocery bill, their rent, or their mortgage, so people weren't losing their homes early on. That excessive spending, new government spending, although it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, was important. What we're seeing now is not just unsustainable growth in spending from what I'll call traditional or current programs, were proposals for very significant increases in the size, scale, and scope of the federal government with new government spending. So not just saying there's an increase in, say, our Army and our Navy and defense spending, or not just saying it's just increasing in social programs on the domestic discretionary side, we're seeing new programs being offered, new government spending. And so the concern is that not only were we unsustainable before, we're going to become more unsustainable if these new government programs move through. We saw a lot of that in the $1.9 trillion bill that went through earlier this year under the guise of COVID, really being excessive new government spending.
Well, I want to jump in here and see what you think of the infrastructure package that the bipartisan group over in the Senate is working on. It includes $550 billion in public works spending, roads, bridges, broadband. It will eventually make its way to you in the House. Where do you stand on this package?
So the proof is going to be in the pudding on this package. Is the final bill really going to be targeted to true infrastructure, or is this going to have a lot of new government social programs? The proof will be in the pudding when the final bill comes through. Let's say it's completely focused in on true infrastructure for sake of discussion, and that's the bill before us. The other side of the ledger, the challenge is going to be, is what is the pay for? So under the previous $1.9 trillion in new government spending, a trillion of that remains unspent. I think there's a great opportunity to repurpose those funds into hard infrastructure, roads and bridges, even, you know, potentially rural broadband, which is so critical in the state of Wisconsin. And so we're going to have to look at this bill. I've been advocating that we have targeted specific funding with ways to pay for it. And that's going to be the debate that's going to play out in Congress over probably the next 3 to 4 months.
So you really don't have an opinion on it yet as to whether you would support it or not?
Well, there's definitely not any legislative text yet. So we have bullet points as to what we're going to spend on. We don't really have substantive even bullet points as to how we're going to pay for it. And so it's easy in Washington for politicians to agree how to spend taxpayer money. It's a whole other thing for politicians to sit down and explain to taxpayers how they're going to pay for it. So I'm concerned that we're going to see rising taxes as a way to pay for it. I'm concerned about other ideas of additional debt. I think the real conversation hasn't been had yet, and that is, how will we pay for this targeted investment in infrastructure?
Really quickly here, let's bring in one more call. Dean in Black River Falls. Hi, Dean, what's on your mind?
Yes, I hear the congressman talking about competition in the workforce, which is great, you know, bring up wages and stuff. I'd like to take that one step further, and let's get more competition in our political sphere and get rid of gerrymandering so that we can have good people having a better chance of getting in office.
So, Dean, bringing up elections and gerrymandering, Congressperson, what would you say there?
I think the most important thing, we had a hearing on election law in Washington, D.C. I'm the ranking Republican on the Subcommittee on Elections and House Administration. I think what we want to see is not a government takeover of our elections. We want state control. All of the state maps is all drawn by the state assembly, state senate, and our governor. I think what you don't want is the federal government getting involved either in the process of drawing a map, but broadly speaking, in the running of our elections. Mm-hmm. I think we're best served when our states are making those decisions.
Congressman Stile, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
U.S. Representative Brian Stile represents the 1st Congressional District. Coming up, we get an update on Wisconsin's mosquito population. How bad are the bites where you live? Bring your experiences, questions, 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network.